So this is our first session of Conversations with Carla, and today our conversation is about alien abductions. Now, I know that I said this was going to be informal and casual, so my outline is only 4 pages long. I couldn't stop myself. There were so many things that I wanted to make sure I didn't leave out. And that's why I made notes. So I want to begin with a story that many of you have heard before because it's one of my favorite stories. And it's about an anthropologist who visits an underdeveloped country, this is some years ago, and lets the natives know that human beings have traveled to the moon. And the natives said, "Why, that's fascinating. How did they get to the moon?" And the anthropologist said, "Well, they went in a spaceship." And the natives said, "What's a spaceship?" And the anthropologist said, "It's like an airplane that it can leave the Earth's atmosphere." And the natives said, "What's an airplane?" And the lady said, "It's like an automobile, but it can fly." Well, by the time she found any symbol that made any sense at all to these natives, the story was that humans went to the moon in a gourd. This is a very important point because we believe in a lot of gourds. We do. And this leads me up to considering how to know what to believe. How do I personally know what I believe? Because I do bring up some really audacious things. And the answer is I believe everything and I believe nothing. I believe everything because everything does exist. In the world of quantum physics, we know that there are an infinite number of probable realities, and every one of them sprung into being because of our thoughts and our beliefs. We are the masters of that. So I believe everything. Everything does exist. But at the same time, I believe nothing because by the time this everything that does exist gets explained to us so that it makes sense to our human minds, we've got people going to the moon in a gourd. So I don't believe anything because I believe that the information we get is so distorted by the time that we finally understand it at all that it is only remotely related to the truth. And I can live with that. I can live with that because I know that is the way I understand things today. So when you are trying to decide what you believe, follow your intuition. And another thing that I find helpful is to look for parallels in different spiritual traditions. If you find the same truth presented in diverse traditions, and maybe in different words or a different story, but the same truth, then you can add to a credibility in your mind. Also, be willing to suspend your disbelief, just put it on hold, and be willing to consider new explanations for old history. So with that, are you ready?
Da-da-da-da.
Da-da-da. We are all hybrids. We all have extraterrestrial blood. The Earth is much older than we have been led to believe, and there have been many civilizations that predated ours. And these civilizations are made up of many different kinds of extraterrestrials. And we all have their genes in various proportions because hybridizing is the way that it is normally done in God's good universe. The only people that go through having babies and all the pain and mess are those of us who ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in Eden. And that's a whole nother sermon I will give you later. So, my information comes primarily from Bashar, which most of you know, he is my favorite extraterrestrial, and he is from a galaxy far, far away. And he is from 2,000 years in our future. His people are the descendants of us. His people consider us to be the ancient ones. Now, I want you to stop and think about that. How do you feel in knowing that you are an ancient one? When I first heard this, and I was younger than I am now, it just fit. It just fit. I mean, we have barely crawled out of the caves, guys. And when I think of who we are in these cumbersome bodies and everything we lug around with us, and we are like the origin of this whole lineage of hybrid races, of which Bashar's race is one of the results through several generations of hybridization.
So they do not have these cumbersome bodies?
They are almost totally light now. And as the Earth is ascending from the third to the fourth dimension, the Sasani are ascending from the fourth to the fifth. And we are linked to them. This is not a coincidence, but that's something I don't know enough about to share today. Okay. We are family. They love us. They appreciate us. They admire us. They are eternally in our death because we agreed to this hybrid program. I wish I knew all the words for hybrid. I'm going to have to do a different vocabulary list. So let's talk about abductees. The politically correct term for abductee in this day and age is experiencer. I learned that in MUFON because that is more of a neutral term. The idea of being an abductee has the built-in idea of being a victim. And being an experiencer is more neutral because there are no victims. Bashar says that trace yourselves one out of three, one out of every three of us is an abductee, have been on the grass, have participated in the hybridization program, and did so willingly. There was an agreement made collectively, and each individual that participates has agreed on a higher level, because we agree to everything that happens on a higher level. The other participants in the hybridization program were the Greys. You know the Greys? Little people, big heads, great eyes. The Greys, yeah. And what I have learned, again from Bashar, is that the Greys are not extraterrestrials. They represent an alternate path of human development. We talked about all the variations on the theme, the probable realities, when this could have been true, that could have been true, this. The truth in this case was that some humans developed along different lines from the ones we developed along. And some of the humans that developed along different lines became the Greys, as we know them. Very, very intellectual. Got themselves in a real bind because they became so intellectual they could no longer reproduce. They were dying. I like the Shakers. Okay.
So, you know, that gives good context. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how it worked.
That's
like
true.
Psychologically, how did they do it?
I like the Shakers and the Allogensians. Well, anyhow. So when the Greys figured out what was going on, they put out a call to the other alternate human branches asking for participants to have an high grading program. And we were among those who responded. One of the reasons that we responded is, and you're going to have to brace yourself for this, we too were dying. A lot of this started around 1945 with the atomic bomb. That was a huge change in the way we were viewed by off-planet personalities. That's where they got really worried about us. We were dangerous. We were headed down a path from which there was no return. And on a little higher level, when our people were talking to their people, we all knew it. We all knew that we had reached the end of a path. If we kept on going the way we were going, there was no recovery. And the Greys knew this about themselves and the path they were on. So the high breeding program was a way that both versions of humans could continue into the future, doing wonderful and great things, and not die forever. So, with this all in place, the next 20 to 30 years was the main period of time when there were a lot of abductions. You might notice you don't hear about it as much anymore. Guess what? The Greys died. They're gone. They knew this was going to happen. And so, the high breeding program, for that part of it, where a human actually has to go and donate DNA, is over. However, we created a whole race. We created a race of hybrids, which currently call themselves the Yayels. And the old Sasani name for them, which I think is more lyrical, is the Shalanaya. The Shalanaya. They are going to be the ones we have first contact with. They're going to come and live with us. And we're going to love them because they're our babies. They're our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. Then Bashar's people will be about the third of the races that we need contact with. Contact being face-to-face, because contact's been going on for years. Now, how many of you know about the Phoenix Lights? Okay, it happened in about 97, 98, when there was a UFO sighting of a craft that was like miles wide. And these lights were displayed on for hours and were observed by tens of thousands of people and were on the news until it just all kind of dissipated and went away.
I remember it.
Thank you. The people in the crafts were the Shalanaya. They were the Yaya because they're going to be the first. And they plan to come back. And they plan to do it in Phoenix again. Will you please pay attention this time? And so we can expect that. I do believe it's imminent. Our family of hybrid races, consider this time when we make contact, when we come into our rightful place in the generations of this family, they consider this time to be a glorious homecoming. They are thrilled that we are finally going to wake up enough to know who we are, where we came from, where we're going, and can embrace them and allow them to embrace us and to view all these generations as an epic, as like Gilgamesh. This is an epic tale that has gone on for millennia in our little corner of the galaxy. I said that. Okay, here's a question for you. Are some ETs bad guys? Next question.
Depends on who you talk to.
Are some humans bad guys?
Yeah.
Aha. So when you're trying to decide about if ETs are a danger to you, just consider that some are, some aren't. Some humans are, some aren't. There's no one cut and dried way of describing the gazillion number of ETs that are in existence and that we shall have interaction with as a race. Metaphysically, everything we imagine is real because that's how things get to be real, through our imagination. And we remember that we experience what we focus on. So if you want to go around like Chicken Little and say that the sky is falling, you're probably going to get hit in the head by a piece of sky. But if, on the other hand, you are focused on this other path, this other history, then that is the one that you're going to continue to experience. These are the same laws of God that we teach in Unity, and they apply everywhere to everybody for all time and all space. This is what I really like about Unity, is we don't have to change anything we teach in light of this information. We've been teaching it right all along. These same principles apply throughout all of reality. There is one presence, one power, that's God. God is good. Thought is creative. That's another one that doesn't change. We all, whether we have two legs or 20 legs, whether we're beige or green, we are all created in the image and likeness of the Creator, and we are all part of the same family. So the moral of the story is, contact is imminent, prepare yourself. I am going to get myself a sandwich board. I am telling you, I never thought I would end my ministerial career on the street going, the end is near. Signing a sandwich board, the end is near. But the things I think I know include that contact is imminent, prepare yourselves, and plan to be a calm center of peace for your family and for your community. Remember that we have never been alone. We are being shepherded through this change in consciousness that brought us to this now moment. Remember, it has all happened before. We are a link in a chain of connected races evolving in sync. And the introduction of alien species into our everyday lives changes nothing about Unity's principles. We teach timeless universal truths that apply beyond our civilization. For this were we born, and because of this shall we rejoice forevermore. Now, that's most of what I wanted to say. What do you want to say?
I'm confused about time. It sounds like everything's happening at the same time, but yet there's a past and a future. So, yeah, what?
You just explained it.
Oh, okay. I don't understand it then.
It's because you're living in time right now. And so it's hard to understand when we have agreed to the illusion, the structure of past, present, future. So they exist only because we're still sending people to the moon in a gourd.
The Science Channel and the History Channel have much of what Carla is talking about. If you're interested in seeing it on television. And the thing that amazed me about watching the Science Channel and the History Channel is that I always grew up with the idea that human race started about 1,000 or 2,000 years before the Egyptians. And the Science Channel and History Channel have a documented man in cities 9,000 years ago, or and they have found tools belonging to these Neanderthals that are, you know, 50,000 years ago. So the whole idea that, you know, we have anything in common with anybody, we have to think about how people survived 50,000 years ago. And then you have to think about how people are going to survive 50,000 years from now. I mean, there won't be enough room on the earth, there won't be enough food and things to feed all the people that are going to
We're not staying on the earth.
Oh. Well, Carla, you're not staying on the earth.
Few of you choose to stay on the earth and grow your food.
You're going to go to the moon in a gourd.
Half gourd with travel. And so, like Bashar describes their home planet, which is called SSI, as a big park where there are a few cities, and the buildings that they have are underground, so they do not disturb the natural beauty. He says that their cities are their spaceships because they know who they are. They're travelers. And they have a very rich culture to do it. So the Earth, I've all along thought that the population explosion happened on purpose and on time, because it is an incubator and we need that little boost to get us off planet. This was never our destiny. This was a stop along the way while we were still having these very cumbersome physical bodies. But once we evolve, wasn't I telling you this yesterday? Once you get that ascension going. She says, I'm having hot flashes. I said, you're ascending. She says, oh, crap.
I've had hot flashes for 30 years, and you're getting worse. And she says, wow, I'm ascending.
It takes a lot of energy to do that. I need that heat. I have a question about, or just kind of something that I don't get, about people who claim, you know, to have been abducted by aliens, and everyone, you know, is trying their best to disprove that, or to, because they feel like it's just in someone's imagination. But if we voluntarily, so if there are no abductions and we voluntarily bred with these grays so that we could become hybrids to continue our cult, our society, are the people who, you know, within the last how many years, I don't know, 40 years or whatever, who claim to have been abducted, they did, you know? I mean, it was, did all that take place a long time ago?
Okay, that's about a three-part answer. I mean, time doesn't exist, so I'm going to ignore that long time ago part.
Okay.
Remember that everything that can be is. So probably we could give every answer imaginable to those questions, and they would all be right in one variation of our reality or another. But yes, I believe it happened, and I believe I was one of them, for one thing. Imagine my surprise. And a lot of what went on was just on the DNA level. Yeah, I don't know about all this probing that they talk about.
Yeah, that's, I guess, my question is that it seems like it was, number one, involuntary, mm-hmm. and number two, invasive.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the impression that I got from you.
I would believe that the individuals involved thought it was involuntary because the level of consciousness that agreed to it was not normal human consciousness. And I bet it scared them greatly.
You want to hear a quick story?
Sure.
So, it's one night, there was this weird glow outside my window, and I know that one of the neighbors had like a green porch light or something, but it was a different color, and it was kind of engulfing the entire backyard and everything I could see, and I was like, this is kind of weird. And my first thought was, UFOs hovering above me or something, and I was like, that's crazy. That would never happen. So I went to bed, and when I woke up in the morning, I don't know why I had this overwhelming sensation to like rub my lower back, and I had these scars that I never had before along my lower back horizontally. And I still don't know where I got them, but I just had this feeling like something happened while I was asleep. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And really scars?
Yeah, scars across my lower back horizontally. I don't remember ever having them before, and it was just weird that I had that thought right before I went to bed and woke up and just had the sensation of just pushing back. Mm-hmm.
So what happens then is, I did a little research online about the symptoms if you have been abducted, because most people don't remember it. There's an amnesia. And if these things are true about you, then maybe you are an abductee. How many, what about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11? That's 3 or 4 of us at the least, and I'll bet more. I'll bet in a unity crowd. So I went down the list, and one of them is, do you have a scoop mark scar that you don't know where you got it from? And I'm going, oh no, I don't have any of those except for this one right here, which I do have one right here. You can see it. And then, did you ever have a pregnancy disappear? Oh no, that never happened, except that time when I was 19, when the doctor said I was pregnant, but I wasn't for some reason.
Now you're talking about, is there a male equivalent to that?
The scar you would have.
Right, but not the second, right? That's just for women. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny. I was just like,
that the men don't have to worry about pregnancies disappearing, except that everything that could be is. So, right. Not most of our junctures in this big matrix of time and space.
Right.
And then it went on. Have you ever dreamt that you were on a spaceship? Have you ever dreamt that somebody was doing medical procedures on you? And yes, I dreamt all those things starting when I was like 8 years old. I remember some of these dreams. And so then it starts like dawning on you gradually, because if nobody told you that these things meant anything, why would you ever put them together to a pattern and conclude that they meant something? So that's how it happened for me. And I had, I might turn this off for this. Since I've had no children, no human children, and I did have a real miscarriage when I was 42, that one I don't think was stolen from me. One time I was really sad about that, and I was meditating, why can't I be a mother? And the answer I got is, you are the mother to millions. But that's genetically possible if they're taking genetic material and using it in whatever percentage as they continue the hybridization program, then we could probably all be mothers.
Well, where are these hybrids that they took the genetic material? Where are they?
Spaceships.
We
look at this brown head on this. And you know, hybrids, they don't have a lot of hair. They don't really have a high opinion of hair, actually. Hair kind of just gets in the way.
That's three. They're redoing right here on Earth, or are they
right
now? They're in spaceships, and the plan is that some of them will come and live with us, because we are going to be included. As we awaken and know who we are and where we're going, then we're not going to be so isolated. And the first race that is going to be with us are the first race that was created by the hybridization program between us and the Greys, because they're the most like us.
Are they just going to appear?
No,
they're already here.
Yes, yes, and yes. Some of them are already here. A lot of them still live on spaceships, and it may appear that they just appear.
So will we recognize them?
It depends.
Sometimes.
It depends on how public the information gets. And go on with what you're saying.
I saw a woman one time that I would have sworn was from another planet. She looked like all pictures that we have ever seen. I was just amazed when I saw her.
Was this in this area or when you're traveling or
in here?
Has anyone heard of the Paracas elongated skulls?
Yes.
Elongated skulls. Okay,
yes.
If you see most Egyptian pharaohs and gods,
yes.
They always have these big headdresses and,
yes.
and hats, but they don't show you them. Like when they did a reconstruction of King Tut, they didn't really show he had an elongated skull. And a lot of these elongated skulls don't have the partition in the plate, the two skull plates. So, and then some of them have holes in the back of their head too. So that it could look different for elongated skulls.
Yeah, can I mention something? It's interesting because I'm the type, yeah, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm open to it, but I don't have any draw to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you ask that list of questions, I was like, nope. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, it's starting to make sense. You know, to me, it's interesting, but I don't feel it. But if I'm answering no, it's something that's beyond my experiences, but I'm open. And that's a huge clarification for me.
We've been cloning since the 40s, and right now we're doing a lot of genetic manipulation with humans and animals and stuff, so it's not too far-fetched to believe that somebody did the same to us, to create us.
Oh, I think it's already happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then where is the soul when you clone? Is there a soul when you clone?
Discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Well, they have gotten to clone a human, haven't they?
I don't know.
Yeah, they have. It's just illegal
in
almost all countries. So when they do it, it's in foreign countries.
So does that person
undercover.
Are they everything human except the soul?
I would say they have a soul because if we're doing all this DNA manipulation. That isn't that different from cloning.
It might be a shared soul with the original person. Or
maybe it's like identical twins.
Yeah, if we all live each other's lives.
I would say that about the last four things I've heard in regard to that are very limited, and they're explanations that are still being presented within a human framework, and the human framework of understanding is very limited. So, the answer is all of the above or none of the above.
Have you heard of indigo children?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that part of this, too? I think several years ago, we were in Santa Rosa, and I met this woman. They were talking about indigo children, and she seemed like she was like one of them. She was very on a different plane from us or something.
And then that whole theory is, and it ties into Childhood's End. Do you remember that book we read by Arthur C. Clarke?
Mm-hmm.
And then watched the movie with Corellum, the big red, I thought, sexy overlord.
Mm-hmm. She and I didn't agree on
that. But it was about a time.
Big
brown eyes.
Flying dragon.
but you know something? My guy got really handy with all of his
spikes.
With a good back scratcher.
Oh,
oh come on, babe.
We digress.
Now you're talking.
Okay, so now. I want to talk about why this is such big news to us. Every single Sunday, We talk about how we create our reality with our beliefs. And we talk about how there is a veil, a screen between us and what is really going on. And the reason we don't see through this is created by our definition of the world, how it works, what our history is, what it means to be human, what a soul is. All these things throughout the non-existent centuries of our history have created a very rigid structure and limiting structure as to what we believe is real and normal and human and where we came from and where we're going. And it's the wake-up call to get rid of that structure. And everything is the same. Our ascending into the fourth dimension is very connected to our having contact with the extraterrestrials, because most of them already live there. So this is why this is such news to us, is that we have a very narrow, very rigid, definite. Look at the clothes we're wearing. We wear uniforms. These are uniforms. We restrict ourselves to an incredible degree. Bashar's people call us the masters of limitation. Mm-hmm. We have made a fine skill out of limitation. And in ridding ourselves of that error of thinking, we will be opening to seeing more of the world as it really is and preparing ourselves in our consciousness and our intellect to have contact with the others. It is going to be a big deal when we meet them. They are not us. They are other than us.
I saw a movie last night called Passengers. You heard that? The movie Passengers? Mm-hmm. It's with Jennifer Garner, is it? Was
Lawrence.
Jennifer, huh?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence, and I forgot what the man's name was. And I, you know, when someone asks you right after a movie, what did you think of it? It really doesn't work for me, because I may say just the obvious. But this morning when I get up, and I probably thought about it all night and didn't know that it did, I think this truly was a precursor message that we were talking, you and I have been talking about, because that whole space thing of populate a planet, mm-hmm. with 5,000 people on this, mm-hmm. and in hibernation for 90 years, mm-hmm. whatever, and then the last, when they showed this planet, a little bit with all the spikes and the different things or whatever, but that does follow through. It's worth getting and seeing, at least seeing it. It's a new movie. And it's called Passenger or Passengers, I'm not sure. But it was more interesting to me this morning than it was last night, because I saw the different increments of what was happening and why it was happening, how far the human, I said, who thinks of this stuff? Where does this come from? But like you're saying, it's all there. So maybe in 30, 40 years, that will not be a, that type of thing will not be a...
It won't be fiction anymore.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bashar taught us how to make a spaceship. I've got it on video.
Out of the gourd.
Begin with a very large gourd.
Yeah.
And remember that time and space are both illusions. They are coordinates in an energetic structure. So when Bashar's people have a spaceship, they dial coordinates, time, space, push button, there, like that. Beam me up, Sky.
Back to the future.
So all of the idea of the hibernation that they had to do, and it taken 120 years to get there, that is all based on humans still believing that space is real, and it's not. And it never could work that way. It is almost we're traveling light years to get somewhere. It's never gonna work. And that's because it's not how it works. It works with machines that know the coordinates that allow it. Just like we've got map coordinates for space. There are coordinates for time also. Right, they get the space coordinates, time coordinates, push button. Hi guys, right here. So that's the difference between that movie, but I think the concept of planet going off planet and colonizing is legitimate. I really do. I feel, talking about whether you feel attracted to this or not, I believe that my job in a universal layer is to be a first contact liaison. And I believe I'm doing it right now at this table. I'm probably an ET in disguise because I came to prepare you for first contact.
So what is their, what was their process for choosing who to breed with?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, like, was there a process? I mean, the
I think it was on the genetic level.
Genetic, okay. Yeah. We end up with a whole planet of
disabled.
Or, yeah.
So back to the garden. Do you know that when God discovered that Adam and Eve had eaten from the tree of the knowledge and good and evil, one of the things that God said was that women would now give birth in pain. You remember that? Well, the whole tree thing is when we decided we were separate from everything else, that we were separate from God and from everything else, and that we believed this whole earth environment was real, and it was all that was, except for some invisible heaven, maybe. And therefore, everything that happened had to happen within this context, including making new people. And so when we're believing that this is real, then we have to have procreation and giving birth, and humans give birth to humans, because that's the only way. It's a closed system. And I think that God was telling us, if you are buying into this system, you're going to be giving birth in pain. And also that the more scientific way of doing DNA manipulation has been around forever. And God was, in God's own mind, comparing it to, why are you going to do that when we've already got this all figured out without going through that mess? That's what I have to say about that.
So is God an extraterrestrial?
God is all that is, so yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know the story about Lilith. There was a girl before Eve, mm-hmm. that she didn't want to be Adam's.
She didn't want to submit to us.
Yeah, so right. then Eve was created from Adam's rib, which kind of to me sounds like taking some DNA, mm-hmm. and replicating. So no. Mm-hmm.
The Ark, Noah's Ark, DNA repository.
Yeah.
There were two of every animal.
Yeah, two
of
every animal.
There was DNA from two of each animal.
In test tubes, you could definitely do that. Be a little box.
But how would you explain that if you couldn't put it in a board? So. Anything else?
We had a friend who is the one who first introduced us to extraterrestrial. And boy, sometimes she just seemed crazier and crazy. But she also seemed pretty darn insightful. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was this, it's almost like this time and space. And Dick, you read her writing.
Yeah.
You've done what?
Well, she started writing a book.
Oh, okay.
And she had about two or three chapters. It's very interesting. I can't remember much about it, but she was abducted into the spaceship, and these commanders, they communicated. They didn't move their lips, but they just, you know, communicated. And they promised her that they would come back.
They would return.
Return, and she was a spokesman or something like that. And they never came back. She waited more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. And she just thought they were going to come back for her sometime. They didn't.
Is she dead?
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. dead.
Maybe they came back.
That's what some of us think. Mm-hmm. She yeah. taught, interestingly enough, she taught a class again on just exactly what we're talking about. And then she died. Mm-hmm. It was like she got her message out, mm-hmm. and then there was no need for her to be there anymore. She did what she had promised to do.
Was she a younger woman when she died? Was she like 90 or? Was she an old woman when she died?
I'm trying to.
Well, she wasn't. Time. She wasn't too old.
Yeah, she wasn't.
She didn't die of old age.
Yes, so it wasn't like a natural progression, it was more like...
But she was a very thoughtful woman. She was a very bright, bright woman. Mm-hmm. And
I have a friend who's just the opposite of that. He's a very simple man, not well educated, has a lot of disabilities, not physical, but mental. And he described being abducted, and he described how seeing himself float across his house, and then the next thing he remembered was that it was a very gentle experience. I mean, when he was in the spaceship, it was, he felt very loved, he felt very cared for. He didn't remember any kind of difficulty or fear or anything. It was just a beautiful experience for him. And of course, when he tells anybody, you know, everybody thinks he's they stay away from him because of that. I mean, it, you know, they're like, oh my God, he thinks he was abducted by a spaceship. You know, how weird can you get? And I have to admit that I kind of felt that way too. You know, he was sharing that story with me. And, you know, so I was kind of, I poo-pooed the whole thing, you know, in my own mind. I didn't to him, but in my own mind. But over the years, you know, and with more and more kind of awareness just of energy and how we're all just energy, it just seems more and more the truth. And part of me really, I want to find him, you know, and tell him, I'm sorry, I didn't believe you. You didn't lie. You weren't lying. And you're not weird. It really happened to you, you know?
Okay, so when we watched the Celestine Prophecy, and the bad guys were the military and big business and the government and big religion, and this one line was that if what the people teaching the Celestine Prophecy, if that was true, there wouldn't be any need for those people anymore. And that's why they were fighting it so hard, was they were in survival mode. So a lot of what's coming up when you think about ridiculing people who talk about these things, ridicule is a big tool. And it was being used by our own big government, our military, our religious people as a way of discrediting information that was a threat to their survival. And ridicule is a very powerful tool. Why else would we all think this was something we could make fun of? What else is there in our society that we would have singled out to make fun of everybody who believed in it? We were taught to make fun of it.
You know, generally it's interesting. My son, who's 20, and I were having a conversation, and he said something to me, and I didn't know. You know, he's like, Mom, my generation, he didn't use the word ridicule, but similarly, he said, that's my generation, Mom. We do this all the time. It's just how we are. And I feel like, you know, it's not really respectful and all the issues, but he's just like, that's our generation.
I think that's something that's very different.
Yeah.
I think the ridicule I'm talking about was enforced by the government as a way of controlling and discrediting information that they considered a threat to them. And with your son, I think that that may just be a generational style.
Right.
But I don't know that it's enforced to discredit people.
Yeah, I don't know, because I think it is an effective tool even that way to discredit people. So,
smack.
Well, I was thinking, there are all his friends on the internet, and I'm like, wow, if this is, you know, he has friends all over the world, they're playing these games, and they're ridiculing. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know, but yeah, thank you, I'll bring him in.
Bullying is bullying.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
And then the ridicule, it's like, well, if the person isn't, I don't know, we don't have to go down there, but it is all that stuff, and that's why I said something to him.
The nature of ridicule. Okay. Anybody else?
You said the grays died out, but maybe they moved on because have they found any physical remains or anything?
Now that you mention that, my son is a civilian with the Air Force. He's a chief scientist with the Air Force, civilian. Mm-hmm. And he's been on like space security, all sorts of projects. But he has told me, you know, the base, where is it? Area 51. He told me that the Air Force people, the tops, and he's with the Secretary of the Air Force and stuff on a weekly basis practically, and all this stuff. What is in there are those bodies that they took back are still there, and that's not just a rumor. He said he knows that just from what people say. Not that he has seen it, but that it's known inside. The other thing is, they had took all the parts of that ship, spaceship or whatever, and there was this weird metal that they used that they couldn't figure it out. It's taken them years to figure out, and now within this past 2-3 years, we're using it on our planes and missiles. But it took them forever to figure it out, and that's been a hugely guarded secret so that the enemies of Russia or whatever don't get that same thing. And this metal also has a quality of not being able to be seen. In flight, it has some sort of thing. But this stuff that they got was sealed away at Area 51, and it's still there.
I thought they took it to Dayton.
It seems to me, and I might be, it's something, you know, it's like there was something that was taken away from Area 51, and it was put into a different place that was in.
Maybe the Air Force metal, but the bodies of whatever are supposed to be.
The bodies were taken. They probably kept it there.
I thought it's the other way around, maybe if something happened, because I think that if they were going to take it to Wright Pat, they're going to Dayton Wright Pat, which is the biggest, that's the directorate for the Air Force.
Yeah.
That's where they probably would do their studies. In a secret there, where in the tomb of whatever they have in the mountain there is married where they kept.
Why keep it a secret?
Because my understanding is, from what Mark has told me, is they figured it would be pure panic the whole nation, just pure panic. And so it wasn't necessarily a malicious thing, it was, oh my God.
Okay, I have a couple things to say. First of all, I believe this is why our space program was ended. Our space program was ended because they learned from the extraterrestrials about the time-space button what was the sense in sending rockets up any longer. I'm from Florida. I lived by Space Center for 20 years, and I never could figure out what happened. And then I realized that the top level of government, who are in communication with ETs, learned that we were on the wrong track. It's never going to be about light years or booster rockets, and therefore why continue a space program built on something that was fallacious? Then there was something else I was going to say about that. Space program. Oh, okay. So consider what has happened in the arts in our lifetime. The generations younger than us, several generations now, have never known a world without ETs because they were in the cartoons they watched on Saturday mornings, in the video games they played, that maybe under the advisement of ETs, but there has really been a program to get us all used to the idea. It has infiltrated our TVs, our movies, our kids' cartoons and comic books, and so the idea of the panic, I think, was really right. But they've been working on it in these kind of innocuous presentations.
Yeah, all the superheroes that have all these superpowers and things like that.
You know, one thing I don't understand what you said about the space program ending. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. It's like, aren't they now they're working towards sending people to Mars or something? So,
but the shuttles. Think about everything that has not happened between sending people to Mars and the last exciting thing that happened.
Oh, right.
I mean, when they grounded
the
last
funding.
Shuttle.
They cut the funding. Yeah.
But they privatized.
But they cut the funding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You and can't do anything if you don't have any funding.
Right. So the human curiosity continues. This is our goal, mm-hmm. The funding is there to make it happen quickly. Is that kind of...
Yeah, well, the people that don't believe make the budget.
Right. Yeah.
Where do you get those devices? Buttons.
If I can find that, because it's a video.
It's
not a video of the ship. It's a video of Daryl Anka channeling Bashar. So, you know, if you want to watch this guy going rah, 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 for a half hour, I can get that. That Bashar actually says what metal to make the ship out of. He's got diagrams. This is all Bashar.org. You can find out a lot there.
So is it Bishar or Bashar?
B-A-S-H-A-R. Have I not loaned you CDs yet? I've been taking it very easy with you, Tom.
Well, he's on the internet, too.
Stick around, because those days are gone! I have been taking it easier with her.
That was one of the biggest things there on my side of self, too, is the crack that's in the universe. And we saw that last night in the movie. They have to... And they're spinning around all the stuff. So right now, the Americans are trying to get the junk out of the scares and trying to corral them or whatever. And every single one is actually defined and marked.
Yeah. Other satellites and things like
that? No, the things that have broken off. Yeah. It's called space garbage.
Right.
The stuff that's big enough to damage things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can scrub anything, can't we?
Well, what President Obama funded or wanted to fund, I don't know if it passed, a way of being able to destroy an asteroid that is supposed to be heading towards Earth, which I thought was pretty interesting. You know, nobody's gone there before. It seemed a little bit out of the what's considered norm for someone in that position, mm-hmm. to make that statement. And it made me wonder, you know, kind of what his belief was, you know.
Or what he'd been told.
Right, yeah.
Well, that passed, and they developed a rocket, and they didn't want to destroy the asteroid or comet. All they want to do is just push it.
Yeah.
Push it a little bit to the left or right.
Mm-hmm.
So that when it comes within range of Earth, it'll just pass us like all the other garbage. But destroying it was too complicated. They did, because you have to have an explosive up there. And so they decided they would just leave it alone and push it aside. They had one that actually did that. I mean, they had an asteroid come, and they did use the rocket, and it was successful. And so they felt everything was kind of okay, so we're not going to get blown up, at least as long as the United States is capable of doing space travel, but I wanted to mention this business about what Carla talked about, the space program stop. I kind of agree with it, but I always got into this problem concerning, well, we went to the moon and we had all of these plans about establishing a colony on the moon. And then we went, then the colony on the moon was supposed to be a base for travel to Mars. You know, and all of that stuff, we left a little car up there or something. And I thought to myself, that's, you know, kind of interesting. You start to do a program and then all of a sudden you stop it. And they said, so there was a lot of criticism about the cost of doing that, you know, and the cost, according to Congress, was that it was too expensive to set a colony up there. Now they're talking about setting a colony up on Mars. They're going to bypass the moon, they're going to go directly to Mars. Well, they have sent a rocket to Mars that had one of these little rover cars, and the rover cars goes, you know, like one or 2 miles an hour and sends back pictures of what it's seeing. And then it does chemical analysis of the dirt or whatever is there. And they're kind of impressed with the possibility of doing it. The air conditioning, there is some air, the gravity is not bad. You know, you could put somebody up there. And they haven't figured out what you do when you get up there. But they could set up a dome and you convert the air that is in Mars to something we can breathe, because it isn't the same chemical. I always thought it would, why are we, you know, just playing around? You know, somebody made a big decision to go to the moon, they went to the moon and they quit. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, oh, okay, we did. And we didn't do it. You know, you had all these grandiose plans about sending humans up there to have a city and use it for other types of space travel. It just instantly stopped.
It was full steam ahead with Kennedy in the 60s. Going to put somebody on the moon. And then
we had to beat Russia. There was a motivation.
And
it was a race with Russia.
But now we're using Russian rockets to get to the spaceship.
Well, Russia did. They
had Sputnik, but
the thing is, I'm talking about the moon.
I know, but what I'm saying is, one of the motivations for budget and excitement and so on was about NASA developing a possible, you know, trip to the moon before the Russians did. I mean, it was a race,
yeah,
and we were competitive, and we wanted to beat them. So we took everything necessary to make that happen.
Okay.
We could do it again if somebody. I mean, if it was that kind of excitement or competition, I have to say, because I'm very competitive, so I can understand that. I could get there first.
Just within the last couple of years, Russia decided that they wanted to go to the moon. And they didn't want to go to the moon that faces the Earth. They wanted to go to the moon on the other side.
There's one side of the moon.
And they went to the moon and they picked up some rocks and stuff and they brought it back. Now the Chinese want to go to the moon. Wanted to go, they're in the process of going to the moon, and they're going to the moon to a portion of the moon where they have
a
comet, and they're going to go to this blasted out comet hole because they think that it's lower, and what they're going to find different kinds of soil than what the Americans
did. They're going up there to build a factory to build iPhones.
I have a lot of confidence that China is going to do something. They seem to be.
Would be the major problem.
Well, actually, I think they probably want to take
the really
problem.
Are. I think so, absolutely.
And
yeah,
shoot them out. Because they don't have enough. They have their air is so bad and everything like that. So I think they're trying to, let's put them on a condo.
Well,
so when the ETs land, do you think that's going to be the end of separate countries on the Earth? Is that going to finally make us realize we're all one people?
I hope so.
And maybe, you see, now it's going to take another other, somebody, something to be different enough from the entire human race for us to realize we're not Chinese and Americans and Russians, we are humans. Like maybe the most unifying thing that ever happened.
What would be the steps and how that happened?
It's been happening with all the people
I really appreciate your support.
People are. I see lots of people with pens. It's amazing.
Okay, so the first step is a change in consciousness. It is all about consciousness. And once our consciousness has been realigned, the steps will fall into place almost miraculously.
And so you see just the change in consciousness happening by some sort of event from outside?
No, I see it happening Sunday mornings in this room.
Okay. Well, okay. But I mean, if the extraterrestrials then or whatever, those beings are the ones that want this to happen, what kind of an influence do they have on us as a whole world?
They enable us to remember who we are and to awaken to the truth, because it's not that they're going to dominate us, it's that they are going to help us set ourselves free.
Thank you.
And so consciousness always comes first. Okay, I'm turning off the recorder now.